I hate doing expenses, but you know what I hate even more than that? It's all my team's expenses. Receipts from so many people and freelancer invoices and subscriptions nobody remembers. Blah. But you know what can solve that problem? It's Ramp. Ramp is a free corporate card that automates away your entire expense process. The moment your team makes a purchase, Ramp handles everything. Receipt matching, categorization, approvals, the works. And switching to Ramp is easy. The company offers a complimentary white glove onboarding service to help you migrate from your current corporate card to start using Ramp. So don't wait. Switching to Ramp is like hiring a full-time employee for just expense management. Only easier. Over 25,000 businesses trust Ramp, including Shopify and the Boys and Girls Club of America, which is why they were named number one in spend management by G2. And now, for a limited time, listeners of this show can get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/solvers. Ramp.com/solvers. Ramp, that's ramp.com/solvers. Cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? The answer is because the demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand name in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
My friend Jenny Wood is the most shameless person I know. And I mean that as a compliment. You want to find a person who just goes and gets it, who seems to have no fear of embarrassment, who's just willing to take the risk always. Well, you talk to Jenny Wood.
I'm Jenny Wood.
Wait, Jenny, hold on. Not ready for people to hear your intro yet. First, I need to say this. I met Jenny about 5 years ago, and at the time she was high up at Google and was building this incredible career coaching program over there. And she had dreams of one day writing a book and building something for her own. And so, like many people, she asked me for advice about this or that. But I have never, never seen someone action advice like Jenny. Like, she took action on everything I said to her immediately. We would take hikes and she would come with a list of questions for me and would furiously take notes as we're like scaling rocks. And then, boom, she got a major book deal. She left Google. She is building things. And do you know how she did it? Well, among many ways, she was shameless. Totally, completely shameless in the best possible way. Shameless in asking for help, not just from me, but from hugely accomplished people she did not know. Shameless in how she promoted herself. Shameless in the amount of money she asks for things. Shameless in the way that all entrepreneurs need to be. Which is to say, you cannot go out there and be embarrassed or afraid or hesitant. You have to go out there with no shame, no embarrassment. Shamelessness is confidence in action. It's telling people without hesitation that you are worth it. And by the way, this is not me just opining myself on shamelessness. Shamelessness is a part of her book, as you will hear in just a moment. This is a small but telling example of Jenny. So, whenever I record an interview for Problem Solvers, I always start by asking the person I'm interviewed to introduce themselves. It's basically to get a little tape, a little audio of them saying who they are in their own words. And they often do this with a kind of unsureness. Like sometimes they just say their name, like, hello, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Sometimes they say their name and their title or something. But rarely, if ever, do you get the whole shameless package right out of the gate. Like Jenny. Can I first just have you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Jenny Wood, and I did research at Harvard Business School for 3 years, then went on to Google, where I spent 18 years climbing from entry level to executive, ultimately ran an operations team that sat between sales and engineering. And I have now put all of my energy into writing this book, Wild Courage, Go After What You Want and Get It, that helps people reclaim 9 sizzly traits that create the bars of an invisible cage that keep them small. Weird, selfish, shameless, obsessed, nosy, manipulative, brutal, reckless, and bossy. I live in Boulder and I love to hike. I've got 2 kids who are 7 and 9. I met my husband by chasing a stranger off the New York City subway, giving him my business card, and later getting hitched to him.
Jenny, we're going to talk about being shameless and all the lessons that you have there. And you are going to reframe shamelessness as something that should not be feared or looked down upon, but actually a good trait. And I have to say, to start, that was a pretty shameless intro. You packed a lot in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, people say that authority matters, right? Like people, like, why would people trust me? If I'm some bozo off the street, then like, what do they care what I have to say? Like, I've done a lot of things that I'm proud of. And using the phrase, I'm proud, is one of the most powerful things you can do. Let's say you're pitching a client, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this incredible testimonial from another client. Why not be shameless and say, I'm proud of this feedback that I just got from this client last week. I'd love to work with you too. The phrase I'm proud, to me, is one of the best 2-word phrases you can use. Another example, we had a nanny we were hiring. She filled out a form where we asked her a couple of questions so we could not waste time interviewing people who didn't, you know, meet the bar. And some open-ended question about, you know, what else do you enjoy to do? She said, because we were looking for someone who could also do house management activities too, you know, cooking, cleaning, laundry. And she wrote, I'm an exceptional cook.
Mm.
That is a shameless word to use. And I swear, Jason, I hired her because of that, because we wanted someone to help with cooking. Who doesn't want an exceptional cook in their house? But how often would a candidate say, I'm exceptional at XYZ. I'm an exceptional coder. I'm an exceptional salesperson. I mean, that really makes you pay attention. Shameless.
Yeah. It's true. And also, who would say that they're exceptional at something unless they were exceptional at it?
Yes. And even if you're a good cook, why not use the word exceptional, right? Like, who's defining what exceptional chefery is versus isn't? Chefery, we've invented a new word.
Alert the James Beard Foundation. So that's true. Although I guess I would say, why wouldn't you use the word exceptional if you are not exceptional? The answer is because the next thing that will happen if someone believes that you are exceptional is that you will then have to cook for them. And it better damn be exceptional. Otherwise, you will have oversold yourself. And I think that that's something that people really fear is that they can't live up to the hype that they have put around themselves.
Okay. And yet I agree with what you're saying, but I think that's where the imposter syndrome comes in.
All right. Sorry to hit pause, but we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor and then back with more from Jenny Wood.
Are you looking to own a business that supports education in your community and provides you financial freedom? Well, join Huntington Learning Center. It's the top revenue-producing K-12 tutoring and test prep provider. Huntington delivers better student results than any other education franchise and 45% higher average franchise revenue than its nearest competitor. Huntington has spent nearly 50 years perfecting a proven system that helps students succeed and helps franchise owners thrive. So, why pick Huntington? 4 reasons. Number 1, a low startup investment. Number 2, turnkey systems. Number 3, dedicated support teams. And number 4, multiple revenue streams to maximize your business growth. Don't have education experience? That is no problem. Huntington makes building a rewarding business simple for all. The demand for tutoring is higher than ever. And in today's growing $5 billion industry, Huntington helps you succeed. Call 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. That's 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. Don't wait. Own a business that changes students' lives and yours.
All right, we're back. And now here's more with Jenny Wood, author of Wild Courage.
That's where the lack of confidence comes in. And I find that, you know, in having coached tens of thousands of Google executives, non-executives, directly and indirectly, people outside of Google on leadership, influence, and success, I have found that the bigger challenge is people living in fear, right? People not feeling confident enough. There's this study out of the University of Glasgow, 75% of people feel a lack of confidence at work. So I think the bigger issue is often people not feeling they're good enough to even say that they're decent at something, right? As opposed to the people who use that superlative language, and you don't have to say exceptional, you can also say good, right?
Right.
But people who don't feel like they even want to put the statement out there in fear of them not living up to it. And I think that holds so many more people back than
people saying it
and overselling and then getting burned because they don't live up to their standards they've delivered or promised.
It's almost like what you're saying here is, if you're going to err on one side, don't err on the side of underselling yourself.
Yes.
Err on the side of overselling yourself.
And I don't just mean this for a job interview. Think about each week with your team or your boss or each team meeting you're in, where rather than coming off of mute and sharing something that might be a really cool idea, you stay quiet, you stay silent, you think, well, it's probably not a good enough idea, or maybe it's been shared before, or maybe it's not innovative enough. But you know what? If you come off of mute and you say something, even in front of your boss's boss, at least you're playing it hot. At least you're taking your shot. Like, that is shame. That is like, you know, the shamelessness every day that I think makes people successful is continuing to shoot your shot, not thinking in darkness, but speaking in lightness, right? Like letting your ideas shine. And then if people don't like them, then you iterate on it, right? So you say, hey, I think we should, but you work at an ice cream company. I don't know. You say, hey, I think we should start a vegan ice cream line. And maybe everybody thinks this is not the right idea for now, but maybe it inspires an idea for a soy ice cream line, whatever it is. I guess that's also vegan, but you get the idea.
You're really doing some butchery to the world of food in this conversation.
I know, right?
So
move on. We can talk about widgets. My publisher said I had too many examples that I talk about widgets too often because of my economics background. Everything is
so
like
funny.
Green widgets, red widgets, yellow widgets. And then she's like, can we talk about something besides widgets? And then I started talking about ice cream a lot. Everyone likes ice cream.
Everyone likes ice cream. All right. So here, let's back up for a second here, because our conversation, because you are full of ideas and also because we know each other so well, basically like took off on the tracks before we even set up where the station was. So I'm going to tell you this, Jenny, one of the reasons I was excited to talk to you, particularly about shamelessness today, was because when I hear shameless and I hear fear of shamelessness, the first thing that I flash back to was a revelation in the early days of me having something to promote. And, you know, which is every entrepreneurial journey in some way or another starts with somebody now having a thing to sell.
Yeah.
And then having to get comfortable selling it. And I, you know, what would this have been? It might have been even just trying to get people to sign up for my newsletter to hire me for a keynote or something. And I remember realizing this thing with this very particular person, which was that a couple years into me being editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, I did a couple things with Tim Ferriss. Mm-hmm. I had him write something for the magazine. I had him comment on some stuff, and then he was also on the cover. This was all within like maybe a year and a half span. And I was really taken by how consistently he plugged things that he has. Like, he almost used every opportunity whenever he would write something to try to turn people's attention towards, and I have this framework that you can download at this. And this comes from episode 351 of my podcast. And you can check out. And as an editor, I found that stuff so annoying. Because I was like, would you stop pushing your stuff? Like, would you stop being salesy for a second? But then when it came my turn to start to promote myself, I thought back to Tim. And what I thought was, you know, and this is like a thing I've been trying to train my brain to do, which is to just take as fact that if I'm seeing something in the marketplace and it's working, instead of arguing against why it works, like instead of trying to think of reasons that it shouldn't exist, why don't I start with, it does work, so why? And so I'm thinking, okay, well, Tim Ferriss is extremely successful. He has driven millions of people to listen to podcasts and to buy books and stuff. So like this thing that he's doing clearly works. Why does it work? And the answer, I guess, is because if I'm just a consumer and I'm interested in what Tim Ferriss has to say, then he's giving me opportunities to get even more value. And I don't find that as a consumer and a person who likes Tim, I don't actually find that annoying, even though as the editor, the guy who was like working on his text, I found it annoying, but a consumer doesn't. So then I thought, well, why don't I just do that? Why don't I just kind of be Tim Ferriss in the way that I can figure it out? And I just started doing that. I started dropping in, and you can get my thing here, and you can get, and you know what, Jenny? It works. It works. It was shocking. It was shocking that it works. And that was my first introduction into what feels like shamelessness.
Yeah. So I have an example of that. I wrote the book. It was nearly going to press. And a good friend of mine, whose work is awesome, Mo Bunnell, said, Jenny, I read your book. You do not have a single way for someone in the book to go from offline to online. You need to go back to your book and find multiple places in your book to include a URL, right? Like wildcouragebook.com/resources. And I went back through and I added...
Way to drop that in here right now, by the way. That was good.
I added 17 mentions of wildcouragebook.com/resources. And I am so glad I did, and mentioned throughout the book that I'm a keynote speaker and that I do consulting at Fortune 500 companies and other smaller companies and organizations and trade associations. And that I, you know, and I added a couple stories about keynote speaking. And it's like, people don't know unless you tell them. Like, people think about the sign outside of someone's house when they're doing construction, right? That is full information. If you're driving by that house and you're considering a remodel, when you see that sign on the lawn out front, it saves you time. If you think this house is beautiful when it's done, like, you want to know who's good. People are always looking for good talent. It's fun. It's like, I thought about this all the time as a Google executive, because I'd hire tons and tons of people, and it was really hard to find good talent. And the candidates are always feeling so insecure, or like, you know, who's going to hire me? How do I compete against these other candidates? But on the hiring end, I'm always thinking, how do I find the top talent? So if someone's got a sign outside their lawn telling me like, hey, this is who we are, this is our work, like, that is helpful as the homeowner. If you're an entrepreneur and you're pitching your services, just remember, it is not so easy for the people on the other end to find someone as skilled, as high quality, as efficient, as friendly, and as competent as you are. So give them the opportunity to know that you exist, and so, then tell them 9 more times.
all of what you just said there tracks with my experience. And it makes logical sense, but it is going to run up against some people's feeling that nobody likes a braggart, that you can oversell yourself to the point where people just want to run away. Jenny, there's a reason that your book is structured the way it is, which is that you are taking these surprising positive tacks on terminology and qualities that we often think of as negative, right? That's a lot of what you're doing, right? Like nosy, people think is negative. No, you're saying it's actually... can be a positive. So that's shameless. So people are thinking about shamelessness as a negative. Talk to me about why you think people do feel that, and maybe what they're right about, right? Like, let's validate that there is possibly something bad about being shameless.
Sure.
So where are the lines that you're drawing that people can know if they're inside or outside?
Yeah, that's a great question. You absolutely can take these traits too far. Absolutely. And that's why I caution people to be mindful of trait traps. A trait trap. So these are the 9 traits that can lead to a ton of success when used in a sane and savvy way. But if you take them too far, you will get burned, right? So trait traps are when you take it too far. And for shameless, yeah, of course, we all know that guy who is just obnoxious and too much and doesn't back up the claim with the goods, right? Like has too much audacity or too much, as we'd say, chutzpah, mm-hmm. right? But I still maintain that the vast majority of people live in way too much imposter syndrome and much more of a lack of confidence than an overabundance of confidence. Think about 10 people you do business with right now, clients, mm-hmm. Partners, friends, colleagues. And in those 10 people, would you say more are actually over the top shameless in the classic sense of the word, or more need you to push them and need you to say, nah, go for it. Like, that's a good idea. Why not? Like, go ask that client for their business, ask them for the upsell, ask if you can partner on some new project. Which of those 10 people you have in mind right now, which category do they fall into more? Too shameless or not shameless enough?
It's a good question. You know, I'll tell you the kind of person that jumps to mind as you're saying that. And I think of a couple examples in my life of this kind of person, which is someone who is, they're like a quiet killer, which is to say that they're not bragging about themselves all over the place in an obnoxious way. But in the moments in which they need to convince someone that they are excellent, they are excellent at it. Like they are, right? They have total confidence. And they're not spreading it around scattershot, right? I think mm-hmm. that turns people off when someone is just bragging all over the place.
For sure.
They are instead cool and confident that they don't need to oversell themselves. But man, when it is time to sell, they know how to do it. They're really good at it. And they have a full command over their value. And they are almost as confident not selling when they don't need to be as they are confident selling when they need to be. And I find that to be a very impressive skill.
That's great. I agree.
Yeah. Tell me how people can get there if they're not there. Take it back to me, guy who's like, I don't know how to pitch even a newsletter. Subscribe to my newsletter. I don't know how to pitch anything. I find that it's scary and I'm afraid that people are going to think that I'm obnoxious. And I had that moment of revelation by just looking at Tim Ferriss's work. But still, how do you start to do this?
Yeah. Well, first, it's a mindset shift. So let's actually put yourself back in your... The mindset shift is critical because I think what holds us back initially is the mindset of, you know, I'm not there and I'm not Tim Ferriss. And who am I to even put my stuff out there in the world? Or why do they need another newsletter, right? There's lots on the internet around change management, change. It's like,
right. You're describing almost like arguing against yourself. It's
right.
Like before you pitch it, you start to imagine all the reasons why somebody wouldn't want you.
Right. And so think how often we do that, how often we're our own worst enemy, right? And that's the thing is like when we get into these fears, right? There are basically three fears that wild courage overcomes: fear of uncertainty, fear of failure, fear of judgment of others, right? These 9 traits: weird, selfish, shameless, obsessed, nosy, manipulative, brutal, reckless, and bossy. They're all living in fear of judgment from others, right? Like you don't want to be called shameless if you put your newsletter out there. You don't want to be called reckless, which to me is just erring on the side of action, right? Mm-hmm. It's in a good way. But, you know, so let's think about how you, if you are the one that's getting in your own way, and you're working against yourself, well, what can we do to overcome that? Because it's good news. If you are the problem, you can also be the solution. So let's take you back to when you were first starting your newsletter or starting your, you know, own entrepreneurial endeavors. Yeah. What was something that got in your way? I want you to think of a sentence that either starts with, I can't or I don't. That was based in fear. Anything that you felt like, Tim Ferriss was. Okay, so anything that starts with I can't or I don't, that is, was a way you compared yourself in some way to someone who is bigger.
Sure. Well, okay. If the context here is I will choose when I was first trying to pitch myself as a keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I started that journey because a friend of mine in PR, shout out John Beer, told me, he was like, Jason, you could easily get $10,000 a talk. And I was like, shut up. There's no way I can get that amount of money. And this is like a decade ago. And he was like, no, you could definitely get $10,000 a talk. And then, so what I did is I I came up with a talk. I practiced it a lot. I did it a couple of times for free. And then I got someone to tell me that they have a budget for speakers. And they said, what's your price? And what do you think I did?
You said $10,000.
I did not. That's probably what you would have done.
Yeah,
that's you would have said $20,000.
That's percent.
You would have said my fee is $20,000. No, I didn't do that. Instead, what I did is I said $5,000. And the reason is because, to go back to your prompt here, where you wanted a statement that starts with I can't or I don't. The statement in my head was, I don't think I'm worth that.
Okay. So now take that statement and say it again. Add the word yet to it.
I don't think I'm worth that yet.
How does that change how you feel about what you just said?
Well, this is an interesting thought experiment. I really like that shift. Although I have to tell you, I think that back then, to say I don't think I'm worth that yet is still to say I don't think that I am worth $10,000 right now, but I know that I can be worth $10,000 later.
Exactly.
And so I'm still going to charge you $5,000 for this talk.
It's funny. Right? Yeah.
Because I did feel confident that I could get there, but I definitely didn't feel like I was good enough at the time. But I like what you're saying by adding yet, because what you're doing is you're putting this moment onto a continuum and you're giving it a purpose in a way, right? Like there's a way to look at this story where I just undersell myself and that's that. There's another way in which I look at the story and I say, what I was doing was stepping into the fullness of what I could ultimately sell. First, I did a couple free talks, then I gave a 50% fee talk, and then I gave a 100% fee talk. And that does this thing that I love, which is that it gives me a sense of momentum, like I'm building.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, to be fair, like we talked about, you know, how do you know when you're taking it too far? I think I've fallen into the shameless trait trap a lot in the last several months. I think I have pitched too high and I have lost deals. Like I have, you know, pitched that 20 when you, you said, you teased me, rightly so, that you wouldn't have pitched 10, you would have pitched 20. Well, I've done that. I've done that same type of thing and I have gotten zero. So, you know, I just had a talk where the deal was nearly done. Great fee. It was going to be, they then came back and said, could you do it at 3 a.m. in the morning, your time? Our audience is mostly Europe and Asia. And I was like, 3 a.m. in the morning. I was like, wow, this is really close to book launch. I don't know if I can lose a whole night of sleep and like pull an all-nighter to do this. And so I came back and said, could we do 6 a.m. figuring we'd land on 4:30 and then at least I could go to bed early and get a chunk. And they just came back. They're like, no, like, sorry, we've gone with somebody else. And so I was shameless. You know, I fell into a trait trap there where it's like, if I really wanted the money, I should have just said, yep, 3 a.m. sounds great. How, you know, where's the dial in and I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that, like, I am not saying that this works every time, but I think that, again, the vast majority of people will benefit from playing it a little bit hotter, right? Speaking up on that client call or saying $10,000 and seeing what happens. Oh, by the way, here's a real practical one. I wouldn't say any number. I would let them anchor first. What is your budget? How have you compensated speakers for this event in the past? You know, what is typical for you? Like the more you can do to get them to say their number first, gosh, the worst thing in the world is when an entrepreneur is pitching a project, they give their number and the client is like, oh, wow, amazing. I had 2x to spend, you know, versus what they just mentioned. So before getting real tactical, and I love to get practical, the more you can have somebody else anchor on the number first, then you don't even have to be shameless. Then you just react based on what they share. And then if we're talking negotiations, I also love this tool called the ping pong strategy versus the ping ping strategy.
Ooh.
So ping pong is they say a number, you say a number, they say a number, you say a number. Ping pong, ping pong. Ping ping is basically, my dad taught me this when I was a kid, negotiating against yourself. So that would be if I say, I'm 20,000, but I could also do it for 15,000 if 20,000 is not in the budget. So it's ping ping. You're hitting the ping pong ball twice.
Right.
You never want to say a number and then negotiate against yourself with a lower number. Let them say another number. You might say, I'm 20. They might say, we only have 16. You land on 17.5. Instead, I went from 20 to 15, and you're never going back up to 20 once you say the word 15.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and that applies to any kind of entrepreneurial, you know, deal.
Totally, totally. And I've experienced every part of what you just said. I remember the first time I got a fee above $10,000 mm-hmm. for a talk, it was $15,000. And I thought I was killing it. And I flew down to like Kansas or wherever it was. And the event was great. And then the event organizer actually drove me back to my hotel. And when we got to the hotel, before I got out, she was like, hey, I just want to give you a little piece of advice, which is you could go higher.
Because there you go.
I actually had more budget. But when you said 15, we were like, great.
There you go.
Which was great advice, but also like really, really popped my balloon. But
it was a learning experience.
It was a learning experience. But okay. So let's go back to this thing because I want to continue to unpack like how do you develop this shamelessness? And I'm curious, Jenny. So here are these moments where you shamelessly pitch a really high number for an event, right? Mm-hmm. You are going for it. You're saying I am worth a lot, and you don't get the event. Mm-hmm. How do you feel when that happens?
Oh, it sucks. It sucks. Huh. And you're probably expecting me to say, doesn't bother me at all. I just move on and I pitch the next one with like, you know, because I'm like made of steel wool, you know?
Yeah.
But well, no, it does suck. Like it sucks. I was super bummed out when I lost that 3 a.m. deal.
Oh, you were. So that's so interesting.
I was super bummed out. Yeah.
Because here's what I was expecting you to say. So this is fun. What I was expecting you to say was shamelessness is a numbers game. Like if you are going to be shameless, then you are going to know that you're going to lose out on some things, but you're going to swing so hard that the ones that you connect on are more than going to make up for the ones that you miss, which is why it's like, screw the one at 3 a.m. because I'll get another gig just like it. And it'll be at a normal time. And therefore why I didn't have to do that one in the first place. But that's not what you're thinking.
Yeah. So it is, I think that, you know, depending where you are in your entrepreneurial journey, if you're week two versus week 222, mm-hmm. it's different because, you know, when you're taking enough swings, I think you eventually get to the point where you're like, it all comes out in the wash, yeah. right? Like they're not all going to be winners. I actually think that event would have been 48 hours from now, or I guess 48 hours plus whatever gets us to 3 a.m.
When you and I are talking right now.
Literally right now. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And like, I cannot imagine having lost that night of sleep at this stage in book launch for me, right? Yeah. So I was able to retroactively, you know, justify it being perfectly fine. And it does help that I have a ton of pitches in market. But if you've only got like two pitches in market over a 3-month period because you're week two of being an entrepreneur, not week 222, then it stings more. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and it's also, to me, it's a learning experience. It's just like, okay, so sometimes, like depending on what you're prioritizing, am I prioritizing keynote experience? Am I prioritizing money? Am I prioritizing, you know, being well-rested during a critical week, during pub week? On any given week as an entrepreneur, you're prioritizing different things, right? Whether it's money, work-life balance, you know, enthusiasm, or you know, like enjoyment of the project or whatever it is. So I think it's a moving target to some extent. But, you know, going back to, okay, well, how do you do it? What are the tools to do it? There is something that is like way, way, way more at the core, kind of like the adding the word yet to any sentence, the mindset mm-hmm. shift. There's something else that I would also offer to you that has nothing to do with like your pricing or like pitching yourself or, you know, dropping your URLs in your article online, whatever it is. Yeah. I actually think it's knowing your value. Like, mm-hmm. can I do another pop quiz for you?
Please.
Okay. What are your, I call these power assets that make up your power portfolio. They're basically your strengths or your talents or what you bring to the table. And I find that many people cannot articulate their value clearly. And this isn't like, this is just like things you're good at. Like, I'll give you my example and then I want to mm-hmm. ask you what yours are. And there's no wrong answer, though I can coach and tweak if you'd like me to, what I think is it helps make it more powerful for future clients. Yeah. But for example, mine are stakeholder management, building influence, and I'm going to reframe those. Influencing stakeholders is number one. Leading people is number two. And number three would be building things from startup to scale. Those are my three power assets that make up my power portfolio. We can talk about the mix just like you'd want in your financial portfolio of different types of power assets. But you know, what would you say just off the top of your head, yours would be your three power assets, three strengths or skills that you bring to the table?
Just like generally speaking.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so this is interesting because when you first start, before you gave your examples, I was like locating this inside of speaking, where I used to say things like, it's one of my most valuable things is that I have a lot of energy.
Okay. But
I changed that. And the reason was because I started hearing more and more from clients about what it was that they liked about me. And then I just started to repeat those things back to them.
Perfect.
So I started to say, for example, the most valuable thing about me is that I'm really tactical, so that people have frameworks that I will teach them that they will use for the rest of the event. And then when they go back home,
great.
Like I just stole that from things that people told me they liked. And I found that to be, really, really useful. So that's how I do that now. But I don't know if I'm torturing the answer here because I look at that, but I just want to give you like a general thing because of the way that you were answering the question for yourself, which is that a thing that I think that my core asset is that I take complex information and I communicate it simply.
Like okay.
everything that someone hires me to do is just me doing that over and over again. That's how okay. I think of myself.
I love it. So let's take those three. Energy, tactical. You've got high energy, you're tactical, and you simplify complex concepts Okay. So I would argue that many people don't know those three even. Those were three great ones. If I had to tweak it, if I had to push you, I would say I push people to have like two business hard skills and one people soft skill. So I think like energy, I agree. Like that one could probably be reframed because like what's the bottom line to the company about your energy? Tactical things I like because that means that's stuff they can take home. But I would actually maybe add one if I were going to coach you on it. And I'd say add one that's like, I help the company's bottom line because I help your employees thrive through change more, right? So I mean, short said shorter.
Yeah,
but something
good.
That's about like, how do you help them make more money or, you know, work, collaborate better together or something that's focused on them, even though you're talking about your power assets.
Right.
So
right.
Two business, two hard skills, one soft skill. And that doesn't mean you have to be a coder. That doesn't mean you have to be, a technical person to talk about hard skills. I just always, you know, coach people when they say, I'm good at teamwork, you know, like at Google, right? Or as an entrepreneur, I'm great at collaboration. I'm really good at teamwork and I'm a pleasure to have on the team. Like if someone comes to me with those three power assets, I'm like, ooh, let's strengthen those, right? Like if someone says I'm good at collaboration, say you're good at go-to-market strategy, right? Because it takes collaborating to have a good go-to-market strategy. And that sounds a lot more like a harder business skill. But like that's shamelessness right there. Being able to articulate, you know, I'm high energy, I give tactical examples and I can simplify the complex. That is shamelessness. It starts at knowing your core value. And how often are you sending an email to a customer that articulates those three things? If someone sends you an email and says, hey, Jason, we're interested in having you come in and speak at our event. And I get these emails, you know, as well. The first thing I'll do is I will, you know, obviously say how excited I am to come work with them. But I will say the three ways I can help your audience are boom, boom, and boom.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's like they want to think what value you're adding. And that's when your power assets, your shamelessness around what you bring to the table comes into play in a very basic way. It's not about pricing. It's about knowing your value and articulating that value.
And that is to be shameless. Jenny, this has been really great. Tell me in the most shameless way possible how people can get the book or get in touch with you or hire you to speak or whatever it is. I don't know. Be shameless for a second. Yeah. Let's see you do it.
Great. All right. So the book is available in all formats, hardcover, audiobook, ebook, anywhere books are sold. And shamelessly, please buy the hardcover. I am gunning for the New York Times, shamelessly. I want to sell 15,000 US hardcover books this week, the week that you're hearing this right now. So go pick up the hardcover because that is all that counts for the New York Times. So that
is so shameless.
Shameless. That, you know what? Here's the thing, Jason. People don't know. And if people are indifferent, I mean, listen, if you're only an audiobook listener, then like by all means, buy the audiobook if that means you're going to listen to it versus not. But people have no idea that it's only hardcovers that count for the bestseller list. And so if someone's indifferent about format or if they enjoy both formats, I am helping them help me. And sometimes people want to help out.
They do, right? They heard you and they're like, oh, I want to support.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. And something I've learned, my example of this is that I started at the end of every LinkedIn post that I post, which is daily. I write like, if you liked this post, please share it and follow me. And then I link to me, Jason Pfeiffer, for more.
Yeah.
And you know what? It increased the number of shares and the number of follows once I started doing that. It's hilarious, but right, you're like, if you ask someone to do it and they liked your stuff, then they'll do it, but it wouldn't know to do it if you don't tell them.
It's that sign on the front of the remodel in your neighborhood. If you like something, you think that remodel's looking pretty snazzy, you want to know where to find that person. So speaking of, I'll share some more. It's jennywood.com/newsletter. I-T-S, JennyWood.com/newsletter is where you can get my super short weekly Tuesday bite-sized tip around how to be more shameless and nosy and manipulative. We didn't even get into that, but it's a super, super great skill that helps you build influence through empathy. And whether you're selling a product, an idea, or yourself, or anything, the ability to win friends, allies, and supporters is about mutual benefit. That's what I talk about in that newsletter. And then you can hire me for keynote speaking, jenny@itsjennywood.com. Just email me and we'll have a conversation. I'll start with my three power assets and then I'll let you anchor first on your price.
Well, Jenny, you have displayed shamelessness very well here. Your shamelessness is always welcome on Problem Solvers. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonpfeiffer.com, JasonPfeiffer.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonpfeiffer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.